Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Mask mandates mean nothing to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast using a big block Chevy for power. He once tried to unscramble an egg. Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm assuming it's morning where you are. It certainly is morning where I am. Thank you so much for joining us today. You have reached the location of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. As my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, just told you, I am Doug Jones, your Medicare expert. I'm so happy to be with you today, and I'm hoping that we can share some Medicare information that will be at least interesting, if not helpful to you. The whole reason we're here is to make you feel good about that transition you probably will face, or maybe have already faced, about changing from regular old insurance, regular old health insurance, maybe Obamacare, to Medicare, because that's coming up for most people. If you survive the first six decades of your life, then that Medicare transition is going to be one of the things that you'll be probably grappling with at some point in the next few years, if you've, once again, if you've managed to make it into your 60s. And so my whole reason for being is to make that process easy for you to engage without making mistakes. In other words, here are the choices. Let's throw out these really, really bad choices. Let's retain a few of the good choices, and you select the best one among those good choices. And if you change your mind later on, let's see if we can't do it in such a way that you'll have an opportunity to correct any errors that you might think you've made after having lived with it for a while. Kind of like going to a clothing store, trying something on. You go home with it, and then you decide, something, this doesn't fit as well as it did in the store. Well, I want to make sure that you don't do anything that's so irrevocable that you cannot change that decision, if possible, within a fairly short period of time. So anyway, the way that I would suggest that you engage yourself with Medicare for the Lazy Man is to buy my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023. It's on sale at Barnes & Noble, and it's on sale at Amazon. So if you take your trusty computer and you go to Amazon.com, there's going to be a search window. In the search window, if you type Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023, because I got a lot of people still buying the 2022 book. It is not up to date, but for some reason, people are not searching for the current 2023 edition, and they're buying the 2022. That's fine. There's not a huge series of differences, but you know, I like to make sure that people have the most current edition in hand. So buy the 2023 version, read that sucker. You're not going to spend much time doing that. In fact, you might want to do it in the evening. Have a couple of drinks, and you'll be through with it before you know it. Now, you may want to go back later on and review a few of the chapters. But the cool thing is that here's the opportunity you have to go back to where you bought the book, probably Amazon, and leave a customer review, hopefully 5 stars, telling what there was about you like the book. The written part is very important. It gives a lot of added weight to your opinion, and it really helps future potential readers, people that are younger than you, that are coming down the pike, and they would like to have reliable information. If you thought my book was good, if you would, please go back to Amazon, leave a short customer review. Doesn't have to be long at all. Could be a couple of words, just indicating that the book was helpful to you, or it entertained you, or it was something to do while you were, being booked into jail or something like that. As alert listeners of this podcast know, one of my newer clients is a soon-to-be-released convict in a state penitentiary, and he apparently, my book has penetrated the walls of the prison because he is an avid believer in the Medicare for the Lazy Man method of approaching Medicare. So he's asked me to become his insurance agent, and I have said, yes, I will be happy to do that, sir. There are other reasons to enjoy the book, and some of those might be being able to have an intelligent conversation with my friend and my podcast engineer, Randy Carson. He won't engage it with anybody who hasn't at least given some thought to reading the book, because he's a company man all the way. Randy, wouldn't that be true?
Absolutely. It's just like my next door neighbor. He used to, he's still in the beer business. He was a distributor, or what was he? A vice president of some sort of sales for Miller Brewing.
Marketing. I thought he was a marketing guy.
Yep, he was up in Milwaukee. He wasn't. Uh-huh. He didn't live in Milwaukee, but he lived here, but worked out of, worked in an office, or the process was in Milwaukee, but. Bottom line is, the fact of the matter is that he did a lot of interesting things, and I took note of a lot of them.
Well, sure. This guy apparently was not only a beer expert, but was also kind of a fun guy. But you told me about one weird personality quirk that he suffers from that.
Gosh, yes. Should I mention, publish this to the world? Yes.
I think you have to.
If you weren't drinking a Miller product,
You
were a dead man.
Oh, I was thinking about that other thing. He apparently is in love with the Phoenix skyline.
Well, yes, he spends a lot of time on his roof.
Well, he moved so that he could have a roof that would allow him to.
Yeah, he moved so he could have a flat roof, and he could stand on top of it and watch the lights of the city twinkle in the distance.
Yeah, that I don't know how many people spend the evenings up on their roof. and he's got to use a ladder, I think you told me. It's not convenient to get up on that roof.
No, actually, it has a spiral staircase up to the roof. So he didn't put it there. Apparently, somebody thought this was a great idea, and he's continued the idea. What I was glad he did is put a railing around the flat roof so that people weren't taking a face plant off of his roof.
Yes, my houses in my development here are all territorial or Santa Fe construction. They all have flat roofs. And every time I'm up on my roof, which is like 15 feet off the ground, if I look over the parapet, I realize the parapet is knee high. It's not safe at all. And the ground is beckoning to me. Come to me. Come to me. Bring your face down here and put it right on this, on me.
Oh, yeah. I got to tell you a story as soon as you finish your comment there.
Well, I was going to say, I have a client who is in Florida, and she and I were discussing, I can't remember, we were discussing oddball things one day because I solved a problem for her. She was in a chatty mood, and I don't take up my client's time unless they want to chit-chat. But she said, she's the first person that's ever admitted this to me. She said, I can't drive across a high bridge. I think I was telling her about the Mackinac Bridge and how they have people there to drive panicky drivers across the bridge for them. And these guys just spend all day driving back and forth across the bridge. When a driver says, I can't do it, then they take over and drive the vehicle. Well, this woman admitted to me that she will jump. Her urge is almost unfightable. It takes over her, the urge to jump off of whatever she's crossing that would be, a very high expanse.
That's an interesting observation. My first inclination would be stay away from the edge.
Well, she can't. She just can't bring herself to do that. But anyway, you had another thought you were going to share with us.
Oh, gosh. Now
you forgot the other thought.
What was it?
Oh, all right. Well, let me get going here. I've got an important headline story, but you break in if that thought comes back into your head.
If I come up with anything, coming back to my memory, I'll wave my hand.
Right.
I was so interested in the woman wanting to jump off the edge that it took the other thought right out of my memory.
She's in her 80s. She hasn't done it yet, but she has expressed the thought that she wouldn't be able to fight that urge. And I think a lot of us flirt with that urge, but she says that she would surrender to it.
I just remembered. I'll give you the short story.
Okay.
I used to work in a skyscraper, and this particular building was 28 stories tall. And that's not a huge skyscraper, but for Omaha, Nebraska, it's scraping the sky.
Yeah.
And so next door or across the street was about a 20 story building. It was the top of the building was lower than ours considerably. So I'm not a good guess of how many floors it was, but every lunch hour when the window cleaning season was on, which was spring, I could look out my office window, and the window cleaners taking care of the insurance company across the street would eat their lunch sitting on the top of the building with their feet dangling over the edge with their lunch pail balanced on the edge.
Yeah. I think there's some school of thought that says you get used to the heights and you are impervious to them. But I will tell you that there used to be a terrific park in Chicago called Riverview Park. It was a big carnival and had roller coasters big time. The fastest roller coaster in the world was there. And the scariest roller coaster in the world was called the Bobs. And every year on June something or other, they had the whole place was open for the exclusive use. Every dollar that they made during that one day was going to go to charity. And the charity was something that white suburbanites would support. So the place was full of white kids. And that was the only time our mothers would let us go. And they would take Ford station wagons full of us there. We would eat a picnic dinner. And then we would go get in line for our favorite ride so we could be first. And my friends and I would line up for the Bobs. It was the scariest. But if you went to the Bobs first, if you rode on the Bobs, the first thing you did, nothing else in the park would scare you that much. So we'd stand in line, and the black teenage ride attendants in jumpsuits were the first ones to ride the roller coaster to make sure it was not going to fly off the tracks. And these guys sat on the back of the cars. They had their feet hanging out. We had to have the bar across our laps, and we were frightened by that. These guys were, they stood up and they were waving, and it was so frankly, there's a lot to be said for the experience of having endured that sort of an environment and not being afraid of it anymore, I guess.
Well, I was a very short story, not the same building, but a building close to it that I could see from our skyscraper bank was when it was being built. I could literally go nuts just watching the construction workers walking across the beams.
Yeah.
At, 15 stories up.
Were they using rivets? Because we see that in the 1920s, when they're building skyscrapers.
They were not. What they had was they had a high lift drag line or whatever they call it. And then they would lift up a beam, and there would be two guys, one riding on each end of the beam up 15 stories. And then they would wrangle this beam into where they needed to have it with, and they'd have this big punch looking thing, it looked like a punch, but it was a huge looking punch thing. And yeah, they would use that to wangle the bolt holes, in alignment.
Sure.
And then they would bolt it together.
Right. But before they had bolts, they had rivets.
Yes.
So there'd be a guy with a bucket and a fire, and he would heat these some bitches up, and then he would toss them up to the guys on each end of the thing, and they would hammer them into the hole, and they would get distorted, and that's what would hold the building together.
Oh dear.
And that's what held ships together, and that's what failed when the Titanic hit the iceberg.
They had cheap rivets.
Well, they had cheap sheet metal too. The pieces Did of they? Metal that were being held together were they were brittle.
That's right. That's right. It was a little bit different concoction, and the hull was brittle.
Right. All right. Let me get to this. I know the audience is wondering about our headline our headline article today.
Absolutely.
But I've entitled this one Tragedy in Texas because, and I knew Randy would be interested, and I'm pretty sure a lot of the audience members will remember one of our good friends and regular contributors, Steve. Now, Steve and his wife are they're prized clients of mine. They purchased the Medicare supplements that I sell and that I suggested to them. And so far, they seem to be pretty darn happy with it. But Steve is an intellectually curious kind of guy, and he's always got a lot of questions. And so I always am happy when I see correspondence from him, because that means we're going to have something else to talk about that's going to be interesting in the Medicare area of endeavor. And so Steve sent me a message, and here it is. He says, "Hi, Doug. The medical practice I was using," now Steve seems to have a lot of problems with his doctors. In many respects, they are unusual in that they don't take Medicare assignment. They want to grab an extra 15% of whatever they are charging him. And so they don't fit into the mold that most people are going to encounter when they have Medicare. So this is just another indicator that his doctors are not operating in the way that one would expect when one comes into Medicare. But he says, "Hi, Doug, the medical practice I was using started using a service called IntraCare. I thought this place would better manage the front end," in other words, the business area of a medical practice. "Calling or getting a call back was a real challenge. At the same time, one of the doctors that I really liked was leaving to start his own practice, so I figured this was a good time for me to leave and to join him in his new practice." So then he goes on to say, "This last week, I get a call from IntraCare saying that since I was with Medicare, I could get a call from a nurse twice or maybe once a month. Before I found out the details, I told the person that I had switched to this other doctor. And then I got to wondering just what type of Medicare ripoff this was. Unless I had some terrible chronic condition, why would I want to get a call from a nurse? If I told the nurse I wasn't feeling well, he or she would tell me to see my doctor. Now, what can you tell me about this?" Signed, Steve. Well, I thought to myself, Steve is an intelligent guy, and I'm sure that he probably did the research, but I will start at the beginning and do what a normal person might do to research something. I went to Dr. Google, and when I punched in the name IntraCare, I discovered something so shocking, so horrifying, so depressing, and frankly, not what I had expected at all, that I'm not sure Steve has actually followed the process of researching IntraCare. It may be that he said, "I don't care that much. I'll let Doug research it and he'll have something to talk about. But here's what I discovered about IntraCare." And I hope Steve at least is sitting down, because this could mean a major change in his lifestyle. And it could be that somebody is trying to send him a message or enroll him in something that he had not anticipated. But IntraCare turns out to be a psychiatric facility. And Steve, it sounds to me as though somebody has enrolled you in IntraCare. If they're calling you all the time to make sure that you're okay, apparently you have been signed up as a patient of a psychiatric hospital. Now, in the Houston area, and I can't remember where Steve is. I thought he was more closer to the Hill Country, but he in the Houston area, IntraCare has two psychiatric hospitals. And apparently they've taking care of a lot of patients, but I just read this disturbing headline. I had to print this off, and this is the bad news for Steve. A medical facility in the Houston area has been forced to shut down, requiring hundreds to be moved to other facilities. Records obtained by Channel 2 investigators show that IntraCare Medical Center Hospital was given warning after warning. Officials with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, that's the CMS, those dopey people that can't spell their own initials properly, should be CMMS, and they spell it CMS. Anyway, they wrote multiple inspections or had multiple inspection reports that turned up problems that were a danger to the health and safety of patients. During inspections in July and September, IntraCare was cited for chemically restraining patients without an updated treatment plan. Another inspection on November 17th showed the same problem with how patients were physically restrained and the staff's use of so-called quiet rooms for patients who were agitated. After that third inspection, IntraCare sent a letter, or was sent a letter, stating that its contract with Medicare and Medicaid was being terminated because of deficiencies that represent immediate and serious threat to patient health and safety. This may be why they haven't actually come and dragged Steve out of his house and thrown him into the hospital, because this particular mental hospital has had to close its doors. IntraCare officials said that more than half of their patients were on Medicare or Medicaid, and the facility could not financially survive without that money, so there was no choice but to close the hospital. IntraCare was one of the largest inpatient psychiatric care hospitals in the Houston area. Its closure was expected to put a strain on other county facilities. Harris County has 52 state-funded psychiatric beds per 1 million people. And the national average is 147 beds per 1 million people. So Houston, Harris County has about one third of the capacity for mental patients that other areas in the country do. Harris County is well below the national average when it comes to having resources to treat the chronically mentally ill. Many patients wind up in jail for minor crimes simply because there are not enough beds at psychiatric hospitals to treat everybody. IntraCare chief executive officer said that the hospital will not try to win back its certification, saying the process is too long and costly. IntraCare has a second facility in North Houston that still has its certification. The CEO said he was trying to transfer as many patients and staff as he could to that hospital. Well, so that's the good news for Steve. If, in fact, he really does need psychiatric care, there is another hospital in Houston that will be able to accommodate him, or to at least take care of the people who want him to live in a medical, a mental hospital. Once again, word to the wise, Steve, it may be that somebody has it in for you, or it may be that your doctor is telling you something. I don't know, but I would question those around you who might have hooked you up with this IntraCare call, monthly nurse call service, because it might be more important to you than you know. And Randy, I see by the big old clock on the wall that I have just chewed up between talking about heights, fear of heights, and mental treatment. I have pretty much chewed up all of our podcasting time for today.
We have used every bit of our 75 cents worth of airtime.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that it's still only 75 cents. What a bargain, huh?
I know. It really is. It really is. But we need to close up shop for today. But before I do, I always want to tell you thank you for joining us on the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. You could have been a number of different places doing a number of different things, and you weren't. You chose to spend a few minutes with us, and we're certainly appreciative that you did that. So in the meantime, if you could find some place to give us a rating, because we are always in the midst of the rating wars for the podcast and the book, we would be so excited if that was 5 stars. But in the meantime, you have just spent 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma. No more living up in the high altitudes behind Cave Creek, Arizona. I think we're up in the nosebleed section today. I heard Doug say we're gaining on about 12,500 feet.
Oh, boy. My brain doesn't work that well when I'm that high.
That's above the oxygen need. 10,000 feet is as high as you can go without oxygen, but
yeah.
Your fortress of solitude that you spend time in, it's magical.
Oh, boy. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. Bye-bye.